Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Great to have you here. As always, Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Hi, Brian.
Hey, it's good to be here.
My name is Dave Spano, CEO of Annex, and so much to talk about. Obviously, we have to give some homage to Alan Greenspan, yep. Who has passed 100 years old. That's a pretty good run.
Yeah, that's impressive to live to the nice old age of 100, and he lived a very full life as well.
You think about all the things that he did, and we spent so much time talking about the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're going to come back to that because we should give the respect that he deserves. But what a lot of people are talking about this past week, Brian, is you know what some are calling the tech wreck. I think might be a little bit overstated, but
yeah.
All of the spending that's gone to AI.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I think a lot of this really stems from the different parts of artificial intelligence. If you remember last year, the biggest story was around like semiconductors. So companies like NVIDIA, you also had Broadcom, Qualcomm, these companies out there. So that was, you know, the brains of the computers. But now the story is much more shifted towards the memory part,
right,
where you have companies like Micron. You also have a couple Korean companies because some of this memory is in short supply. It used to be that memory was a very, what we call, cyclical industry. It had its ups and it had its downs. A lot of it tied to when are people going to upgrade their phones? When do they upgrade their computers? Now it seems like there's just this like persistent demand for the different types of memory. And Micron, when they reported their earnings, they were blowout numbers,
yeah, right?
I mean, in terms of the growth in the earnings per share, the profit margins as well. So their gross margins were something close to like 85%, which is pretty incredible. It shows the pricing power they have. But when you think about if there's any hint or whiff of, is that growth going to slow? Right. Are those margins going to compress? It can have an outsized effect on the prices. So along with these really big numbers for growth and margins, you also oftentimes see these big swings in the prices. And I think that's what's happening.
It swings in the prices of the stock. And think about it for those who are listening to the show. So these memory companies have great profits and they're wide margins. But guess what? You and I are paying for them,
uh-huh,
because you can see, for example, Apple phones have now $1,299 for a phone. They're saying some of that is because of the input cost that they have into this phone.
Yeah, this past week it was interesting. Apple announced the cost increase. So it's projected in terms of the iPhone, but then also the MacBooks that they have, the iPads. I don't think they still make those iPods, unfortunately. I used to always love having that. But you know, the increase because of the shortage of chips and memory at the same time, or around about the same time, Microsoft announced that with like their Xbox system that they were going to increase those prices. Sony, I believe, was also one of them who announced it as far as with their PlayStation system. Now we're beginning to see some of that voracious demand for chips and memory affect consumer prices.
That's
it's
right.
Not just affecting the prices that the Googles and the Microsofts have to pay. We do too. In fact, this past week, the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index came out. And it showed that for electronic goods that we buy, the average price has increased by about 10% from a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that pales in comparison to like, you know, the 40% increase in gasoline prices. But it is still, I think people are going to start taking notice of it.
And I want to come back to that because that's important because of the Federal Reserve and, of course,
mm-hmm,
inflation. But let's just stay on that for a minute. At the same time, you talk about some input costs and the fact that all of these data centers are exploding around the country. But guess what's happening? There is now some pushback and some, actually even some political pushback of what can be a data center and where can they go?
This really started at the local level where certain municipalities and then states were passing almost like a moratorium on building, right? You can complete the current project, but you can't add more. Now there's some talk from different people in Congress about whether or not this should be at the federal level. This will, I believe, be one of those many talking points that we hear about as we approach the midterm elections. It's probably the reason why this time of year, as we go between now and say like October, can be a little bit more volatile for the markets because you do get people posturing as far as, you know, what policies should be implemented. And those policies do have effects, right? If they suddenly decide, hey, we're going to put a 1 to 2 year moratorium on new data center construction, that does have a big effect on everybody involved in that whole ecosystem.
And you talk about inflation. And of course, I did say we were going to talk about Alan Greenspan. And he served as chairman of the Fed for many terms and many presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he used to, you remember back then, it was the briefcase indicator. How wide was his briefcase before he went into the meeting? And even back then, CNBC would say, oh, the thing is thick, so therefore he's going to make a move or not. But there was a lack of transparency back then.
Mm-hmm.
We went full circle where the Fed just regurgitated everything that they were thinking.
Oh, yeah.
To now, Kevin Warsh would like to go back to probably a little less transparency.
Yeah, it almost seems like Fed chairs since Alan Greenspan have moved towards even telling us about what they had for breakfast.
Exactly. Right. Too much.
Exactly.
Not only the chairs, but the governors too.
Oh yeah, it was like the a Fed contest.
Yeah. You know,
everybody wanted to get those headlines. And so for Alan Greenspan, 1987 to 2006, the first policy statement that came out from the Fed after a meeting was in February 1994. Right. So all the way prior to 1994, there were no policy statements that came out. And you just had to kind of infer from his briefcase, color of the tie, what was going on in the markets. Did they change policy? So they changed that in 94. And then after you had Ben Bernanke take over in 2006, he really pushed to have more of that, what they call forward guidance.
Right.
It wasn't just explaining what they did. But it was also maybe a little too much about what they plan on doing.
Which was the dot plot or the dart plot, because it was guessing, right?
It was guessing
what the future was going to look like.
Yep. Now, I'm all in favor of the transparency, but you can have too much of a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with
and
that.
Go
back to Greenspan, though. Of course, back in the mid-1990s and the markets were really starting to heat up, you'll recall, and they asked him a question, and he famously said, there is a bit of irrational exuberance.
Yeah, he was a little early with that. 1996, because we know that the tech bubble continued to inflate until, you know, 1999, 2000. But still, he did recognize that asset prices did seem to be pricing in almost too much of a good thing as well, being divorced from the reality of cash flows and earnings. And I think that's a stark contrast to today, because a lot of these companies, I mean, they have massive margins and cash flow. But when we look at his policies during that period of time, he would talk about it. But one of the criticisms was, did he do anything about it? Was it enough for him just to highlight, hey, there's a little irrational exuberance? And a lot of people are now, well, maybe he should have actually tightened policy. I'm not sure that the Kevin Warsh is going to follow the path of saying that, you know, the Fed needs to prick every little perceived bubble that's out there, because some of it was justified, especially up to that point where you had the internet and computers, the improved productivity. Well, look at what we have today. Now you have artificial intelligence, which could be a massive boost to productivity, also maybe put downward pressure on inflation. So it's interesting the parallels between Warsh and Greenspan.
You know, you talk about back to Alan Greenspan, he was married to Andrea Mitchell, the NBC anchor. And so they must have had great conversations, right? But I was thinking about one of his famous comments too and how it affects everyone who's married. What is this, one of his famous sayings that he said to, after a Federal Reserve meeting?
Well, sometimes he would say, if you think you understood what I said, I must have misspoke.
Exactly.
Now, do you ever use that line?
No, I don't. But my wife asks her isn't that what you said? So, yeah, folks, this is a really good conversation. A lot more to come. But if, you know, you're going through this right now and you're not sure what's in your portfolio and there's trends that change and they change on a daily basis, we can help. And we can help with an in-house team. And I'm talking about estate planning, tax planning, financial planning, of course, in-house investment management. We don't subcontract that out. So no pressure. We listen, and then you can get good advice. And so hit the Get Started button at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Well, Roth conversions can be a powerful planning tool, but they're often discussed in kind of broad terms that leave investors maybe unsure whether the strategy truly fits their situation. So the real value lies in understanding the trade-offs, the tax impact today, flexibility in retirement, and how timing and income level affect the outcome. So to cut through the generalities and maybe some of the broad terms, we're sitting down with certified financial planner and senior wealth advisor at Annex Wealth Management, Mike Kirk. Mike, thanks for being on the show again.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Glad to be here.
When a Roth conversion does and does not make sense based on an investor's tax picture, what are we talking about with clients when it comes to that?
So Roth conversions are a strategy, and the strategy is built to match what your goals are. Every year we file our taxes, we have to make square with the federal government, and that's important. Every year you have new goals that you're looking to achieve as well. So a lot of this is contingent on what your goals are and what your current tax situation is today, as well as what it is projected to look like in the future. Now, this strategy is actually pretty simple. So if your goals are screaming that we want to pay less in taxes, conversions could be the smart play for you. If your goal is, I may not use this money, I want it to be earmarked more for legacy purposes, a conversion is also one of the top priorities that we would explore for you as well. Combining these two is very important, but for us to understand what is your current tax situation, future tax situation, and what are your goals, we blend those together and we will come up with a tailored, customized strategy for you given the state of the state.
Timing certainly plays a factor. Income fluctuations, life happens like we've talked about on this show. Market conditions influence conversion decisions as well.
Yeah, and that's all part of planning. Sometimes people say, well, I know my tax situation right now and I have it under control, but I think it's going to change in the future. That's where planning can help answer those. Almost every investor that's retired or nearing retirement is familiar with the term RMDs, required minimum distributions. That is an example of a big situation that could change your future tax situation. If you know that that's coming down the road, maybe it's a year, maybe it's 10 years, maybe even longer down the road, what are you going to do this year and the subsequent following years to prepare for that future tax pain? This is where conversions come into play. Occasionally, the market does give us certain opportunities where a conversion strategy should be accelerated within a calendar time frame. As planners, we're very cognizant around what's happening in the now, what are your goals now, and your future goals, including taxation as well.
And things might not be the same as they were a year ago. Common misconceptions maybe that you've seen that investors have about some of these Roth conversions.
Yeah, this is a great question. A lot of times it starts out very simply. There are rules around what you can contribute to a Roth and what you can convert to a Roth. So the first layer of conversation that we usually have is, well, how can I do a Roth conversion if I don't have any earned income? I thought I have to have earned income to participate in a Roth. You are correct. You do have to have earned income for contributions to a Roth, but you do not have to have earned income to proceed with a Roth conversion. So there is a lot of education that we do around what is the difference between contributions and conversions. And once we have identified that we're squarely in the conversion space, we are diving in pretty deep as far as what are the tax impacts of this technique, benefits for you, your family, and how does this help you get closer to your goals as needed. So we spend a lot of time talking about those conversions. Then, of course, there is the right way to do conversions and then an okay way to do conversions as well. And a lot of this comes around, how do we pay for that tax? These conversations come up. We like to get crafty. We like to be creative in the way that we would deploy the strategies to help accelerate this, knowing full well what our end game benefit is for us. And Joe, for what it's worth, more often than not, the savings that we are showing potential people that are looking at these conversion strategies is usually very significant.
Well, and talk about what earned income actually is. What qualifies as earned income?
Right. What earned income is not, is it's not your Social Security. It is not your pension. It is not distributions from your old 401k or an IRA. Earned income really boils down to, did I go to work, get a paycheck, and at the end of the year, do I expect to get a W-2?
Certified financial planner, senior wealth advisor, Mike Kirk, thanks for being here again.
You're welcome, Joe. Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click that Get Started button at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist here at Annex Wealth Management. I want to let you know about a number of events that we have coming up. One of them is in person, and another one is going to be online through a webinar. The in-person event, Single in Retirement, Financial Planning Strategies, and our Women in Wealth series events that are always well attended. These, I think, are going to be incredibly important for people if you're experiencing different life changes. Think about single and retirement. It can happen for a variety of reasons. Obviously, there's the emotional side of it, the psychological side, but there's also a tax side of it, estate planning side. Those are the things that we really want to sit down and help coach you through. You can go to annexwealth.com, click on the events tab to sign up for that. Another event that we have coming up is one that I'm really excited about. I'm excited about all of our events, but this one in particular, because it's on July 2nd. That's a Thursday at 9 a.m. Central Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, where we're having part of our Instant Insight series. For these Instant Insight series, we like to take late breaking news, things like about the employment situation report, the inflation numbers, what the Fed did or didn't do, what they may or may not have said, and try to give you perspective about what we're thinking about on our investment committee. So this upcoming Thursday, that event is going to be about the employment situation report. It's a little unusual to have that number come out on a Thursday because usually it will come out on a Friday. But because of the 4th of July holiday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is releasing it a full day early. So that means on July 2nd, we are going to be taking to the webinar screen and actually sharing those perspectives. The announcement comes out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 a.m. Central Time, and we're going to sit down as an investment committee, discuss it, and then share our perspectives on it with you at 9 o'clock Central Time, 10 o'clock Eastern Time. So again, these are all things that you can sign up for. It's part of our commitment to providing empowering education to clients and the public. Go to annexwealth.com, click on that events tab, and you can sign up right now. Again, this is Chief Economic Strategist Brian Jacobson.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. This year, America turns 250, so we've been looking back in America's economic history. So to do that, to help us walk through some of the early parts of the history and how things that we deal with on a daily basis were born, Chief Economic Strategist and Chief Historian at Annex, Dr. Brian Jacobson, back on the show to help us with this segment. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So last time we looked at the period of the Gilded Age, 1865 to 1907, things looked bright and prosperous, but there was growing inequality, a little bit of unbalance as America laid its foundation, a period of trusts, which were companies that tried to monopolize industries. There was a lot of that in the early days, and driving up prices kind of served the basis for antitrust laws like we have today. And one man in 1907, we had fun talking about this on the last segment, locked bankers in a room to get them to pony up to help stop a panic. And that, as you revealed last time, was J.P. Morgan. Today, that's probably illegal, but we're going to look at the aftermath of that panic a little bit, like the birth of the Federal Reserve and the income tax. And 1913 was a big year.
It was, yeah. 1913 was a huge year in terms of things that we still have today. We have the Federal Reserve, and that was created by Congress in 1913, and it was a product of that 1907 financial crisis. I think you're right. We don't need to have the benevolence of a billionaire to kind of bail out certain institutions anymore because, well, the government kind of does that for us.
We might get some things done if we go that route.
Well, maybe, yeah, it might be a little bit faster. We'd have to see. But so 1913, we had the birth of the Federal Reserve, and we also had something that perhaps people would rather forget about, which is with the income tax, because coming out of that crisis, the financial crisis, that was known as more of the progressive era. So Woodrow Wilson became president, and these were some of the things he campaigned on. We had a number of constitutional amendments that were ratified from that 1907 to 1920 period. So we had the 16th Amendment. That gives us the income tax. Then we also had the 17th Amendment. It used to be that state legislatures actually elected senators to Congress. Well, now, as a result of the 17th Amendment, it was the direct election by the voters. And then a few years later, 1919, we had the Prohibition Amendment that was passed, which was obviously later repealed. So very interesting period of time.
Yeah, can you imagine dealing with prohibition and income tax at the same time and just being a citizen listening to all of this?
Just the radical changes that took place. And if you think about it, that's why they called it the progressive age, right? Now, some people might say, well, that's not progress or whatever, you know, but that was the label. Lots of changes. We also had, of course, World War I. That was from 1914 to 1918. United States entering that war. And that was also a really pivotal time in terms of the U.S., its role as a military force, and also as being basically a banker to the world. So a lot of changes crammed into that one period of time.
And we've heard a lot about tariffs lately, too, and that was a lot of talk back then, too.
There was, because the income tax was basically implemented at a very low rate. Initially, it was set at 7%, and it was really targeting only the ultra-wealthy, $500,000 a year or more, which in today's dollars would be about $11 million. That was to help raise money. Prior to that, most of the revenue to the federal government came from tariffs. It was either tariffs or also you had excise taxes, like taxes on alcohol and cigarettes. But if you kind of think about whether or not we could do that today, there's been some debate about that. Unfortunately, it doesn't really look like it would be even mathematically possible, as far as the tariff rate would have to be well in excess of 60%. In order to perhaps even come close to raising the same amount of revenue as the income tax does.
And quickly, what about the cost of World War I and the effect of it?
Yeah, so that's where all of a sudden the income tax rate went a lot higher to finance that, came back down. The U.S. government issued bonds, and really to the first time, these big propaganda campaigns to get people to buy these liberty bonds. Now, part of it too was the United States shifted during that period of time from being a net debtor to the world to being a net creditor. So that's where the U.S. has, to this day, become basically a banker to the world.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist. You can find all of our America 250th celebration of America's economy on our Annex YouTube page and our LinkedIn page and, of course, on the radio with Annex Wealth Management.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. So when you leave an employer or become eligible for a distribution from your workplace retirement plan, you're faced with a lot of choices, a lot of opportunities, important decisions about what to do with your accumulated savings. Options to consider, maybe leaving the money in your employer's plan, rolling it into a new plan, or moving it into an IRA. And each comes with its own set of rules, advantages, limitations. Understanding how these differences affect investment options, control, fees, distribution flexibility, and beneficiary planning can help you make the choice that best supports your long-term retirement goals. Someone who's seen a lot of this, Tom Parks at Annex Wealth Management, Director of Retirement Plan Services. Hey, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
How much control do you want over your investment choices and your account access when you have all these different plans? You've had a lot of different employers, and how does that compare between your employer's plan and maybe an IRA?
Sure. I would start by saying that you want to have awareness, and that might sound crazy, but a lot of people kind of lose track of old 401ks and stuff like that. Then it gets to your question about, like, what level of control do you want to have? And that really does vary by person. So I would say, broadly speaking, in an IRA, you're going to have access to more investment options than you would in a 401k plan, because 401ks tend to have, they can be very expansive, you know, menus of investments, but they're still technically, you know, limited. It might be 20 or 30 or something like that, whereas in an IRA, you can get all sorts of stuff. So really, that's going to come down to your personal preference. But the other thing that's going to matter is how much money's in the account, because investments to which you have access also vary by your balance. The more money you have, the more access you have to more complicated stuff. So all of those things are going to factor in a workforce that's kind of transient. If you have multiple accounts all over the place, eventually it's going to get kind of hard to keep track of all that stuff. So I generally encourage people, when you leave your employer, bring the money with. Now, the question is, what does that mean? Does it mean I bring it to my new employer, or do I take it to an IRA? And that's where it kind of gets into, it depends on the situation. The other question would be, does my new employer have a 401k? Will they let me roll it in? Usually if they have one, they will. There are thresholds where under $7,000, they can roll you out. Under $1,000, they can cash you out. So you might find yourself in a situation, it's possible, this has actually happened recently, where you have received a disbursement from your old 401k plan, but you're not yet eligible to roll it into the new 401k plan. Then you could run into some deadline issues where you got to do something with that money before there's a different waiting periods where, you know, if you don't do something, it causes you a problem. So every single one of these scenarios is going to vary depending on who you are. Being mindful of it, I think, is the most important part.
And what about the fees? Some people say, well, I want everything in one place. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to take it from the old employer, move it to the new employer, but they're not aware of the fees.
Very often people are not aware of those. So I would say, regardless of whether you're moving it from one place or another, Dave Spano always talks about this, you know what you own and
why.
What you're paying for.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. There are really heavy disclosure requirements in the 401k world. So there's a way to get the answer, and it's not that hard. So you can find that. To your original question about control, if you're really into investments, you want to have control over the investments, or you're getting closer to retirement, you maybe have a bigger balance and you want some more comprehensive, detailed planning and investment strategy for you personally. Obviously, I would recommend at that point you work with an advisor. You probably don't want to be doing that yourself. That's where the advisor will help you evaluate your options and kind of pick the one that's best for you.
Is right. There always a fee when you roll it over?
There might not be a transaction fee. Usually there's going to be a distribution fee. Oftentimes rolling money in, there's not going to be a transaction fee for just moving the money into the thing. The question is, what are the overall fees once it's in there? Because yes, very rarely will you find an investment company that does all of its work for free. It's
right,
just a question
yeah.
of, is it in the investment? Is it some other sort of thing?
Those especially when it's not in-house, you might not be as aware of it. And so what level of professional advice or guidance would we look to deciding this?
Right. It's not always super transparent, and it can get complex. Your average person doesn't even know where to start looking. So talk to your advisor to get some help with that. I mean, that's what advisor they're there for, to give you advice on stuff.
And does the beneficiary planning require more flexibility than your current employer plan allows? Maybe you're talking about multiple or contingent beneficiaries.
Usually you can do that in a 401k plan. Sometimes technologically it's more cumbersome at one provider versus another. More and more of the stuff is going online. But if you are married and you're in a marital property state and you're going to designate someone other than your spouse, that usually takes it offline and into some sort of manual process. But I would say, generally speaking, you have the same essential options in a 401k from when it comes to beneficiaries as you might in an individual account. It just, again, comes down to proper planning and then proper execution. And if they are limited for whatever reason, then yeah, you want to keep that in mind. And it's not to say that one is better than another. It's just a question of, what are you doing with that money? How long is it going to be in the thing that you're rolling it into? Because you didn't bring up just take the money out and spend it as an option, Joe, which I'm glad you didn't bring up.
Yeah, I know you don't like that.
That is an option. So we at least need to tell people that most of the time, terrible idea, but it is something you can ponder anyway. Because some companies who hold the money, they are also manufacturers of investments. And so sometimes the fee is just the expense ratio of the investment itself. That's how they collect the fee, by you using their investments, you know, proprietary stuff.
You know, every portfolio tells a story. We say that all the time,
that's
too.
Right.
So it just depends.
Consolidation is a good idea just because it helps you not forget where your money is, but then it gives you a better sense of what you really have.
Yeah, just easier to keep track of. Director of Retirement Plan Services, Tom Parks, happy to walk through that with you at any time. Thanks for being on the show, Tom.
Thank you.
Go to AnnexWealth.com, click that Get Started button.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk. the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Good morning and welcome back to the Annex Wealth Management Show. Our new Women in Wealth page is up at annexwealth.com and including the new Women in Wealth podcast on demand with special guests and strategies to empower women and gain greater confidence. Click the Women in Wealth page at annexwealth.com. Joining me again is Chief Economic Strategist, Dr. Brian Jacobson. Brian, we can probably take a quick tour around the world of what things are happening, and let's start over on Downing Street.
Yeah, so over in the United Kingdom, it seems like with 10 Downing Street, so that's the address for the Prime Minister, they must have a revolving door installed on that, because ever since Brexit back in 2016, do you remember those days?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
They've had a number of Prime Ministers. That's right, yep. So when Britain, they exited the European Union, they voted to do that. Ever since then, they've had some of this political turmoil just over the last like 10 years. Five different prime ministers, and the latest one happened again. The Labour leader, he decided that he was going to resign because his popularity had fallen. And the new person coming in, it's interesting as far as he seems to be more popular, but as you would imagine, that sometimes might come with a price tag.
You know, right? But you're on it, on top of it, right? More popular in the populist move, 2016. What else happened in 2016? Trump won on a populist move, and that's happening here again. And the labor movement, the labor party, I should say, in Britain was it's out of favor, and the populists are coming back into power.
They are, and so that's one of the issues here. So Nigel Farage, who was the big name as far as this Reform UK party, they're trying to find somebody who can run against them, because in some of the local elections, that Reform UK party, they picked up a number of seats from the Labour Party. It will be, I think, really interesting to watch. Not only do we have our own midterms that we get to watch, but for those of you who like global politics, that's another one to really pay close attention to.
So let's move from England to the Middle East. And of course, it looks like there's ships moving through the straits at this point.
Yeah. Now, who knows if there's going to be continued dialogue or if it's going to fall apart. But I think from a market's perspective, what really matters is that those vessels are moving through the Strait of Hormuz. Ever since it was announced about that memorandum of understanding, according to Bloomberg data that we've been tracking, it's anywhere from like 20 to 30 ships a day making it through. And maybe they're, you know, trying to really speed through there. It's like they've been trapped for, you know, 4 months.
Right.
But that's really why oil prices have moved dramatically lower. It's actually been a bit of a round trip where Brent crude, which is an international benchmark for oil prices, that went from about $74, $75 per barrel before the strait was closed, way up to close to like $120 per barrel. Now it's back down to $74, $75. So it has round-tripped.
So round-tripped back to where it was before the conflict began. And so gas prices should be there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Reason why we bring that up is because there was a lot of discontent and consternation about gas prices and therefore inflation. The Federal Reserve now is going to have to look at this and say, well, it's back down to where it was, but now you've got people who want it both ways and saying, well, guess what? All of this economic activity is going to be inflationary. And you can't win.
Yeah, you can't. And anybody who wants to see inflation, they're going to see it no matter what. And that's been one of the things that we've been hearing from some of the research firms that we follow, this diverse opinion. People who say, look, lower oil prices, they're not likely going to overheat the economy. They're not likely going to be inflationary. But yet people who are saying the Fed, they need to hike three times, are saying, well, now everybody's saving all this money and now they're going to spend hand over fist. It's inflationary. I think that it's more likely, guess what? Lower gasoline prices probably mean lower prices.
Yeah. So, but there is something that, you know, I've said to you over the years many times is just watch the 10-year Treasury yield and that'll give you some indication. Well, what we're seeing right now, I don't think we're talking about enough, is a flattening of the yield curve. That's telling us something.
Yeah, a flatter yield curve, that can oftentimes point towards slowing growth. But what I think we need to really do is take that step back and look at, is this telling us that maybe the Fed needs to steepen that curve a little bit? Normally, and so what we mean by that is this yield curve, it's just the relationship between short-term interest rates and long-term interest rates. Most of the time, longer-term interest rates are going to be slightly higher than short-term ones. That's what's called a normal curve. A flat one is when short-term rates are about the same as long. Inverted is when short-term is higher than long-term. It's that inverted curve that you really have to be on the lookout for. It's not a perfect predictor of economic growth, but it has correlated with recessions. Now, what we're probably seeing here is the Fed being on hold for a while with the short-term rates, and it's those longer-term rates. People are getting a little bit less worried about inflation. It's not completely gone, of course, but in terms of the longer-term inflation outlook, maybe it's looking a little bit brighter because of now these lower gasoline prices.
And folks, you know, we talk about these things all day in the hallways, and we also talk about them in your portfolio. So thanks for having us on today. This has been Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. And this show is also a podcast and ready for you. As soon as this show is over, you can download it wherever you get your podcasts. And another way is we put out the Axiom, and that comes every weekend. And there are bits and pieces of not only this show, but a week in review looking backwards. Just search Annex Axiom. Like Wealthiest is also out there. This is ideas, strategies, and decisions on the Wealthy in America. We do a SWOT podcast, right, Brian, that you're part of: strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats of the current markets. And last is the Women and Wealth podcast, featuring special guests to empower women through genuine conversations. Brian, thank you very much for your time. As always, this has been another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. For myself and Brian Jacobson, have a great week. Join us next Sunday at noon. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.